Welcome to The Indigenous Approach, a podcast where we examine the role of the nation's premier partnership force across the competition continuum, from cooperation to conflict and everything in between.
In this episode, Colonel Eric Kreitz, the 1st Special Forces Command Director of Information Warfare, sits down with the 1st Special Forces Command Chaplain, Colonel Chris Dickey. They discuss Colonel Kreitz's very personal story, one of fear, addiction, and hitting rock bottom, but also one of resilience, support, and overcoming adversity. We feel this episode is one everyone needs to hear. Let's get to the show.
Hello, I'm Chaplain Chris Dickey, the Command Chaplain for 1st Special Forces Command, and I want to welcome you to this special podcast on a topic that is critical to the success of every mission and endeavor of this command, in pursuit of our end state to be the nation's premier partnership force. 1st Special Forces Command is the nation's Army Special Operations Division, composed of 23,000 civil affairs, psychological operations, special forces, support soldiers, and civilians who continuously compete with our adversaries across the globe. In introducing the priorities and lines of effort of the command, the 1st SFC vision for 2021 and beyond states, people are our most precious resource. Every year, the Army spends millions, if not billions of dollars on maintaining its weapon systems, vehicles, and equipment. When a piece of equipment is not functioning as it was designed and in need of repair, maintenance specialists across the Army will determine the need and strive to make the repair. What happens when our most precious resource is in need of focused attention and care? Because people are our most precious resource, and because humans are truly more important than hardware, recognizing a need and getting the proper care is often challenging, especially in the environment of special operations professionals. Today, I'm excited to be joined by one such special operations professional, Colonel Eric Kreitz. Colonel Kreitz serves as the Director of Information Warfare at 1st SFC. A career psychological operations officer, Eric leads a dedicated team of professionals responsible for advising the commander and subordinate commands on all information-related operations and activities. Eric, thank you for sharing your journey, and thank you for joining us today as we do this podcast together.
I appreciate it, Chris. Thanks for the introduction. I look forward to talking with you today.
Eric, as we begin our conversation, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your family?
Yeah, I'd like to start with outlining something that our Deputy Commanding General, Brigadier General Marks, kind of walked me through as a mentor. And it was identifying my values and coming up with my value statement. And so when I get asked that question, now I'll answer something like, I'm committed to keeping 3 balanced promises. I take care of myself spiritually, mentally, physically, always be available for my family, and seek to help others. And it wasn't until I was able to define those values that I could really answer that question. I used to scramble around for the answer to that question. But now that I've built that value statement out, I'm able to make decisions and conduct myself through that values lens. And so as I walk through my story in the podcast today, I'll kind of walk through how I take care of myself spiritually, mentally, and physically. I always want to be available for my family. I have a wife and 2 boys that are super active in church and Boy Scouts and sports. And, you know, we love doing things together. And then how I seek to help other people. I've always had a desire to serve. I've had a uniform hanging in my closet since I was 5 years old, whether it was Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts, JROTC, ROTC, and now the Army. I've always had that desire to serve. And now that I'm going through this process, that's something that really keeps me grounded is that commitment to service.
Yeah, thanks so much, Eric. More than one full-time job, just keeping up with your boys. And thanks so much for sharing about your family. So I want to introduce our topic today, our focus. I want to share an experience that I had several years ago when I was stationed in Germany. One Saturday morning, I needed to go to my office on post to pick something up. So I drove up towards the front gate and was greeted by a maze of concrete road barriers that had been altered since the last time I approached the gate, which was the day before. As I inched forward, it looked like there was nowhere for me to go. So I placed my foot on the brake and I just stopped. After a minute or so, the gate guard approached my car and politely said, "Hey, you can't park here." I communicated to him I didn't want to park here. I was trying to get on post, but I couldn't see a way to move forward. He patiently pointed out to me that there was a way forward and directed me to drive in a certain direction, and I would see how I could get to where I needed to go. sometimes in life we can't see any way forward either. Whatever it may be that is holding us back, whether depression, drinking too much, or some sort of relationship struggle, whatever the struggle, we get stuck and we don't know what to do. We don't know how to move forward. It's in these times we need the help of someone to come alongside us and provide the support that we need and to show us, maybe point out the way forward. Friends, here's the bottom line up front. If you're stuck, you're not alone. Reach out and receive the help and support that you need. There's others around you that are there, your teammates, your family. Reach out and get the support that you need. This is our focus today to discuss the importance of self-care and the importance of seeking the support and treatment that is needed in order to stay strong and healthy physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Several years ago, Colonel Kreitz found himself stuck and couldn't see any way forward in his life. Eric, when you were at that period of time in your life, what did you notice? What were some of the things that stood out to you during that time?
I knew something was wrong around 2012, and this journey will include things like recovery from alcohol and behavioral health. And so I noticed something was first wrong around 2012. You know, as I went through college and as I got commissioned into the Army, alcohol had always been around. And so, I would go out and drink with the guys. You know, I got married and just drinking at family events and things like that. And then around 2012, I noticed that I was starting to drink a little bit more. And I was starting to drink to blackout a lot of the time. Pretty soon, I was drinking to blackout every time I drank. And then I realized I had probably had an issue then, but I really wasn't trying to do anything about it. Everything seemed to be together. I still had my family, my car, my job, and nobody was really questioning me about how much I drank. In 2012, I drank the blackout, and I made a fool of myself at a family event. And at that point, I was like, wow, I should probably really do something about this. And so we were stationed at Fort Leavenworth at the time. And I went over to ASAP at the time, the Alcohol and Substance Abuse Program that the Army used to have. SUDSE is what it's called now. And I went and I thought, well, if I can just go here and I can check the block, then my family will be okay with me. Nobody will be mad at me, and it'll be a good way for people to get off my back as far as drinking was concerned. So I went through ASAP, and then I didn't drink for about 3 months. And now I know that I wasn't really sober during those 3 months because sobriety is a state of mind. I was really just not drinking. We PCS'd back to Fort Bragg, and it was at that point where I thought, you know, I've really got a good handle on this. I don't really have to do anything else. I don't have to maintain anything that I learned, and I started to drink again. And I picked up right where I left off before I went to ASAP that first time. And so I continued through that period of my life, continued to be a blackout drinker. I thought I'd had it under control, quote unquote, because, again, I still had my job. I still had my family. I still had a house. You know, when I went through recovery the first time, I thought, I don't belong here. You know, everybody in here just doesn't know how to handle themselves. And everything I'd gotten to that point, I'd gotten because I'd worked so hard to get it. And I was not like these folks here in ASAP with me. And so I didn't think it was for me. And through that period of time, you know, I was hit with different types of feelings of fear of inadequacy, fear of failure, fear of missing out on stuff. And really the biggest fear was a fear of being vulnerable. That fear of being vulnerable is what really prevented me from going out and getting the help that I needed. I thought that if I was vulnerable, I wouldn't be the strong foundation for my family. If I was vulnerable, people would think less of me at work. If I was vulnerable, then I would just be less of a person. And so I wasn't going to let anybody see that vulnerability. And so what I did is I put up this wall, and I call it the work wall. That work wall is essentially nobody's going to see past that wall into who I really am. And frankly, the last thing that was going to fall was how people thought of me at work. I was willing to let my family go, you know, my possessions, everything go before people at work realized that there was something wrong. And so I put a lot of effort into not showing that part of my life. And so I got to the point to where I had to drink just to go see people in my neighborhood, to go talk to friends. I started to isolate a lot. I also sought alcohol out as a means for escape, even having alcohol on my mind as I did things I enjoyed. So family vacations, hanging out with my kids, I always thought, when am I going to get that next drink? Just because that was my means for escape. I didn't have any other tools that could help me deal with the stressors of life. Up until that point, that's kind of what my life was like, was using alcohol to deal with things and not letting anybody in, really, because I didn't want anybody to think less of me. I was afraid of showing that vulnerability.
It sounds like alcohol became a problem, but it wasn't the problem. You mentioned that alcohol was a means of escape and means of maybe coping with the struggles of life, as you noted, and just the fear that taken hold in your life. At some point, as you and I have shared, Eric, at some point things continued on, but things didn't improve. And then there was an event in 2018. Would you share with us kind of what the next stage was in your journey?
2018, I was in command of 6th Psychological Operations Battalion. I had taken command the year prior. Of course, you know, the added stressors of command during that time. But I was still doing pretty well as far as holding it all together, or so I thought. You know, battalion command was going well. My family was still with me. And so I thought, you know, I've really got all this together. And that really gave me the excuse to drink even more. I was drinking to blackout at every night at this point. And again, I was using that justification that I still had a career, I still had a family, I still had my car. You know, everything was going well for me at the time. I was starting to struggle, you know, even with small things like perfectionism. If something wasn't 100%, then it was 0%. I still had that sense of inadequacy, and I was still holding myself to these impossibly high standards. And as I started to kind of go down that dark path, I still wasn't letting anybody in. And I thought, you know, people were telling me I was doing a good job because they felt sorry for me or whatever other reason I gave myself. I put incredible pressure on myself. I felt like I had to be at the top of my game. I couldn't make any mistakes. What really started to happen at that point was I wasn't living up to those standards that I'd set for myself. And so I started going down the darker and darker path. To the point where I started dealing with suicidal ideations and those types of things. I got a really great evaluation from my senior rater. It was one of the best ones I'd gotten in my career. And I thought at that point, if this person only knew who I really was, then he wouldn't have given me this evaluation, and I would get found out, essentially, that what I'm portraying to the world on the front of that work wall wasn't really who I was. And so I continued to drink. I ended up going on leave with my family out to Colorado. And it was at that point where, you know, the drinking had gotten really bad. And the last thing I remember was having dinner with my family. And then the next thing I remember was waking up and staring up at the night sky and looking at the stars in the sky. And I could hear everybody around me. I could see the paramedics shining flashlights in my eyes. And I thought, man, what is going on? Somebody has really overreacted in calling the paramedics. I'm just fine, you know, says the guy laying on the ground.
Yeah.
And so staring up at the sky, I knew what had happened. I knew that I drank into a blackout, but I had no idea what had happened. And so as they're loading me up into the ambulance, you know, they're taking me to the hospital. And I thought, man, you know, I'm doing great. I don't know why somebody would call the ambulance for me. And so I got to the hospital there in Colorado. And the police officer came up to me and asked me if I knew what happened. And of course I didn't, because I was in a blackout. And he said that there was a suicide attempt involved in that blackout. And so I had no memory of it, which is what really scared me. Almost losing my life was a big wake-up call for me. And I remember that one of the first things I told my wife when she came to see me in the hospital was, thank God it's over. You know, I knew at that point that everybody back here at Fort Bragg was going to know and that I would now have the opportunity to enter some kind of recovery program for behavioral health and for alcohol. And so I spent a little bit of time there at Fort Carson at Evans Army Community Hospital, there in the psych ward, just to get me stabilized. And that's where the chain of command really kicked in. I got visits from the folks out at 10th Group, phone calls from folks back here at Fort Bragg, and my entire chain of command was involved in making sure that I had gotten stabilized and I was in a good place to be able to come back here to Fort Bragg. Once I got back to Fort Bragg, the CARE Coalition helped me get my family back here. And then the behavioral health professionals over at WOMAC enabled me to get to the Farley Center in Williamsburg, Virginia for 8 weeks of alcohol treatment. And then that was followed up by outpatient behavioral health in SUDC here at WOMAC for about 4 months. And so that carried me into 2019. And so throughout that entire time, I had the chain of command not only checking in on me, but checking in on my family. And that's what really helped me get through recovery at that point, that early recovery stage that's crucial, is knowing that my family was taken care of by not only the CARE Coalition. My unit chaplain would go by, him and his wife would go by and see my family daily. Folks within my own battalion, the sergeant major was checking up on my family. And so I knew that I could focus on my recovery while my chain of command was taking care of my family. So that was hugely important for me.
Eric, I'm amazed that during this traumatic event, of which you didn't remember most of it, or if not all of it, during this traumatic event that had occurred, you knew that you would have to get treatment. And as you noted, you knew the chain of command back at Fort Bragg would be involved. And I'm amazed at what you felt was relief and not fear. And sort of that wall that you'd built, like, I'm going to, if anyone were to find out, everything would sort of come crumbling down. And what you found was just the opposite. Matter of fact, people came in to provide support, care, and to enable you to get the care that you needed. Can you speak to that for just a moment?
That was the big thing. Was I was able, as a result of that event, I was able to give myself permission to seek help.
Right. Yeah.
And so moving forward through that, what would I've done differently? You know, I'm not sure I could go back and that Captain Kreitz, Major Kreitz, or Lieutenant Colonel Kreitz would have listened to me now. Because that work wall was pretty big, and that fear of inadequacy and fear of vulnerability was pretty strong. But it was at that point where, you know, it almost cost me my life to be able to feel that feeling of relief, and it doesn't have to be that way, essentially. So what I would say to my past self is that first step is the hardest step. I always thought that as soon as I entered some kind of recovery program for behavioral health or alcohol, it would only get harder from there. But it was that first step of admitting that I was vulnerable that was the hardest for me, and it just got easier from there. I got the tools I needed to deal with any behavioral health issues. And I realized that during that process that alcohol wasn't my problem. I didn't drink because alcohol was available. I essentially had issues because of what was going on with me on the behavioral health side that were manifesting themselves as alcohol. And so for different people, it's different. For me, it happened to be alcohol. For other people, it could be gambling, online shopping, overeating. For some people, it's working 16 hours a day. And for some people, it's just not treating other people the right way, right?
Yeah.
It comes out of all of us in certain ways. And I had to find a healthy way to figure out how to deal with those feelings and process those feelings. It was easy for me to try and get better for somebody else, for other people. And it was hard to get better for me. That's what I had to realize. And so if we go back to my value statement, I put myself first in that value statement because I can't be helpful to my family or anyone else if I'm not taking care of myself first. And so I really had to get honest with myself and acknowledge that I had to be vulnerable in order to get the help that I needed. Otherwise, I firmly believe that I would find myself back in that position of risking my life because I was unwilling to get honest with myself and move forward and get the help that I needed. You know, I was wearing that mask at work. It was probably the most dangerous thing I could do with myself. I literally put myself in a position to risk my life instead of getting help. And looking back on that decision, that's really a no-brainer. That's a pretty silly decision. And as I was going through that process, I was always thinking back, like, man, if I leave and if I get help, what's going to happen to my unit? What's going to happen to my battalion? And you know what, Chris? When I got back from treatment, it was still there and it was running fine. You know, I put a lot more importance on myself and my work than I did on my own personal health. And so it was really eye-opening for me to realize that I could take that time outside of my unit to get that help. I was going to be just fine, and so were the people around me. You know, those guys were going to support me. The battalion wasn't going to go to shambles, and I really could take that time to go get help.
Were there signs that a leader could have, you know, we talked about, you know, engage or intrusive leadership. Was there a way for a leader to get behind that work wall?
And so I purposely made it difficult for my leaders to see me in that light. And so I think that leaders do have a role in that to a certain point. And then at a certain point, it does become an individual responsibility to seek that help. What I don't want that to be is a cop-out for either leaders or an individual, but it takes both working together to figure out when somebody should go to behavioral health. It can't just be on the leadership, because again, I was putting a lot of effort into making sure that didn't happen. And it can't just be on the individual. We still need that engaged, intrusive leadership in order to make sure that our soldiers are taken care of.
The leader creates the environment, the culture that allows and enables a soldier, another leader, a subordinate leader to get the help, to take that step of strength, but it's still the soldier, the person, the individual has to take that step. It's a balance there.
I think that's a great way to characterize it. After I came out of treatment in Williamsburg, I came back and I spoke to my battalion about my experience. And after I spoke to my battalion, there were three or four soldiers that actually went to their leadership and said, hey, I think I may be going through something very similar.
Wow.
And their leadership actually went out and helped them get the help that they needed. And some needed more help than others. But I agree with you in that the leaders can create that environment. And I believe in our battalion, we had that environment where soldiers could stand up and say, hey, based on Lieutenant Colonel Kreitz's experience, I think I may need some of that same help. And so I absolutely agree with you that leaders can create the environment.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. That's part of your value statement right there that you started from the very outset. Yeah. So, no, I appreciate it, Eric. Before the holidays, you reached out and you and I sat down and we talked about your journey. And, you know, I remember something that you said just really stood out to me and really spoke to me. You said, Chris, I just want to help people make a difference in their lives. So, and that's, again, core to your value statement. So I really appreciate that, which is why we're here today. And for those that are listening. So as we learned from your journey and the strength that you demonstrated and continue to demonstrate today, what lessons do you want to share with the exceptional men and women and families of 1st Special Forces Command?
I learned before that I had to be vulnerable to help myself. Now, if I can be vulnerable on this podcast in this wider form, if it helps somebody else, then this vulnerability is definitely worth
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
And so what I really want folks to take away from this is that it is possible to get back on track. So I went through the behavioral health process. I didn't lose my clearance. Folks worked with me to make sure that my family was taken care of. I've since been promoted. It is possible to get back on track and get your career back. And so now I'm in an 06 position here at 1st Special Forces Command, and I'm doing really well in my recovery. I also want to let people know that the SOF community, particularly the CARE Coalition and the Chain of Command, were super involved to make sure that I was taken care of and that my family was taken care of. I could really dedicate all my time and effort into my recovery, knowing that my family was taken care of in my absence. And then something else that we discuss occasionally is the stigma that's involved. And this is something that I'm working with my former SUDSE counselor with, is how do we educate leaders about the stigma of behavioral health and recovery? I believe stigma on the outset is unavoidable. If there's a soldier who is in a dangerous position, we have to do the things that we have to do as leaders to make sure that that soldier is taken out of his traditional role and make sure that he's given help. I think where we can mitigate the stigma is on the backside of that experience. Just like my chain of command helped get me back into the system, helped me get back and do my job, and gave me the opportunity to compete for promotion, that's what we have to do as leaders to get those soldiers back on track. It's not just on the soldier. We can't just tell the soldier, hey, listen, man, you got to go get help. There is no stigma, because there absolutely is under our current system. It takes the soldier and the leadership working together in order to help mitigate that stigma. Some of the solutions we've kicked around are things like the dental analogy that we've used, which is everybody has to go to the dentist whether their teeth hurt or not. You know, is there something that we can do in that realm for behavioral health that is akin to the dental process? Can we send soldiers to their providers whether they need to go or not? And that may give those soldiers opportunity to speak with their provider, something outside of a PHA that gets them face-to-face, one-on-one with a healthcare professional. One of the last things I realized is that I can't focus on work to be 100% fulfilling. Again, going back to my value statement, I've got to find those things outside of my job that will help me live the fulfilled life. And so for me, it's service, whether it's service and recovery, reaching out to other folks who may be going through the same thing, or volunteering in organizations such as Boy Scouts or church or other organizations within the Army. That's how I have found in my experience to find that fulfillment. If I put all my eggs in that work basket, if I have a bad day at work, then that fulfillment is going to take a hit. And so I have to figure out what can I do for myself that's healthy, that'll allow me to deal with those stressors to find that fulfillment. Because whereas before I was dealing with alcohol and using alcohol as that tool to deal with stressors, now I have a more positive outlet for those stressors, which is, for me, again, service work.
Thank you so much, Colonel Kreitz, for your courage, for sharing your journey today towards strength and wellness. As you listen to this podcast, if you recognize, as Colonel Kreitz and many others have, that you are struggling with a problem and need support, there are helping professionals across every organization in 1st SFC and across all of USASOC and across the Army. Please take the step towards strength and speak with your chaplain, your behavioral health provider, your doctor, your strength coach, your physical therapist, your teammate, your family. Speak to someone. And leaders, as Colonel Kreitz captured, it's a both and. You know, if you see a soldier, be involved. I think General Marks and General Brennan have talked about engaged leadership. Know your soldiers, be involved, and be a part of their lives. I ask you to reach out and get the support that you need. If you're concerned about speaking with anyone connected to the Army, please Google Military OneSource and call them. They are available 24/7 to answer your call, and you will speak with a professional who will work with you to get the care that you need.
And just something that I'd like for folks to take away from this is that help does exist out there. It is possible to get back on track going through the Army system. Some people choose not to do that, and that's fine. You know, as long as you're getting the help that you need, that's all that really matters. And at the end of the day, I put my job and my career and how I define myself over the well-being of myself and my family. And so I think it's important to have those values that you strive towards so that you can make decisions that lens. If I had my value statement, I knew what I stood for, I would see that my family would come before my work ever did, and that would help me get the help that I needed. And so I'd encourage everybody to just take a look. What do you stand for? What is your purpose? How do you work to gain other people's trust and so that you can go out and get the help that you need and that others can work with you to get you to where you need to be? If I can help one person with this podcast and help one person with sharing my vulnerabilities, then it'll all be worth it. So I appreciate you having me on.
We are all on a team, and as a team, we accomplish the mission together. Thank you and your family for your many sacrifices. You truly are our nation's best. May God bless you and keep you.
This has been The Indigenous Approach. We hope you have enjoyed this episode. Seeking help is not a sign of weakness. If you feel you need help or know someone who may need help, there's a link to Military OneSource in the show notes. Thank you for listening.